bring my own paper to school. That's austerity.
We're not keeping that in.
No, that's the intro.
Yeah.
Just on repeat.
I ended up in the a building owned by the North Korean embassy. Or
is it on purpose?
No, our hostel turns out it was owned by the North Koreans.
Boris Johnson has recently become Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. This means that since 1979, there have been 6 Prime Ministers, 2 Labour, 4 have been Conservative. It was under Margaret Thatcher after 1979 that the British economy was liberalised and opened up. So we are going to be looking at all the Prime Ministers has been dealing with what you would call the modern British economy. And so we are going to be judging each of those Prime Ministers, comparing them and ranking our favourite 4. 1979 to 1990 or 1991, Margaret Thatcher, Conservative. 1991 to 1996, John Major, Conservative. 1996, 1997 to 2007, Tony Blair, Labour. 2007 to 2010, Gordon Brown, Labour. 2010 to 2016, David Cameron. 2010 to 2015 was a coalition with the Lib Dems. 2016 to 19, Theresa May, and 19 to now, Boris Johnson. And we have each gone for the bigger prime ministers. He has chosen Margaret Thatcher, or was Margaret Thatcher was chosen for him?
No, I'm doing Margaret Thatcher.
I hate my life. I just want to die.
Take 6, boys.
It's fine. We can go from the will just one. We'll go from that bit. It's fine.
Matt, this is the content
we
need to be getting on the Instagram, see?
Will, as the far-left communist, we've chosen for you to have the moderately left Blair as your...
Yay! Okay. Big fan.
So he's as far-left as anyone on the field, right? Or would you say Brown was...
No, he's one bar off furthest left. Or, no, or are you furthest left?
I'm one off. Well, actually, no, I think I am furthest left.
You
now.
Were one bar off.
I was one bar off.
So, we have chosen... For Will, as the hard left communist, Tony Blair, the neoliberal centrist third way progressive prime minister from New Labour. Max has gone for.
I've gone for Margaret Thatcher because it's just going to be fun to have to argue that with these people.
I have gone for the coalition years between Cameron and Clegg because. That was the peak of British politics and nothing would change my mind.
And myself, Theo, have gone for John Major, the underrated, understated, absolute beast of a Prime Minister in the 1990s. So, we have each gone for a Prime Minister and we're going to be having a very hard and fast discussion on their merits and their weaknesses. We've each done a fair bit of research on our chosen Prime Minister, some more so than others, but there's no real... yes or no black or white guidelines. In some cases we'll talk about their economic success, in other cases social policy, in other cases foreign policy. You get the picture. Will, you love Tony Blair, we know this. You love him also as much as Margaret Thatcher. Why do you have such a passion for the man himself?
Well, you know, Tony Blair, he implemented a lot of good policies and he was overall, I think, a very solid Prime Minister. And as long as you ignore the Iraq war, you know, because that always taints the rest
That's
of what
quite
he did.
A big thing to ignore.
But the thing is, his domestic policies were very good. Like, if the Iraq war clouds some of the good he's actually done and makes everyone think he's much worse than he is.
How many people died in the Iraq war?
Lots, and he's probably a war criminal.
Yeah, so domestic policy will sell me on him.
Okay, so some of the main commitments of the... Blair government when he took office in 1997 were things like cutting primary school sizes and something very key was something the Labour Party had introduced in 1992. This was a commitment for a minimum wage, which before then we had not got in this country. And since Margaret Thatcher had destroyed the unions and the wage-setting workers' councils had kind of just sort of almost all been lost.
Sounds good so far.
Living wage, the minimum wage, well, many workers weren't being paid a living wage. You could be in a full-time job and still be in poverty, and very importantly, actually, to him, still be in benefits. So you could be in work and still taking money from the state because your employer wasn't paying you enough to get by. So the key thing with this was the whole idea was that if you're in a job, you could be paid enough that you could get by without having to rely on the state, making, at the end of the day, it cheaper.
Right, but hasn't that hurt a lot of small businesses in that their operating costs have increased massively?
Well, if the operating costs of a business means you have to pay your workers properly, then that's sort of just an underlying cost in the business. And paying them less, okay, it's going to make you more money, but do we want businesses that pay people so little that it essentially becomes part of their business model that their government subsidizes their wages? Because that's essentially what's happening. Look at Walmart in America at the moment. They pay people little enough that they're still on food stamps, so they're in full-time employment, but still off the government, which isn't a particularly healthy situation to be in, because you're taking substantial amounts of public money and putting it into people who are working full-time, which doesn't seem quite right.
I mean, that sounds like a situation that still hasn't been rectified in the modern day, though, because you look at a lot of the horror stories under Cameron and Clegg, and all you hear, you know, what the key economic policy was austerity, right? Cutting government spending because there was a massive gap in between government income and government spending, which you call the deficit. So to reduce that deficit, you reduce spending, but didn't it just end up with a lot of people miserable and in hardship?
Yes, and I am not one to normally defend austerity, but it was, I would describe it as a necessary evil at that point. There were two approaches that could be taken to the problem. Like the world economy had just imploded, essentially, and it had to be rectified. The ship had to be stabled for, like, before regular sailing could commence. And they could either do that by spending their way out, which just put the country further into debt and push the problem further down the line, or attempt to cut and attempt to, like, stench the bleeding as much as they can, as quickly as they can. It's like you're ripping a plaster off, you do it fast. And that is what the...
But it didn't work, did it? Because there was a double-dip recession in 2012.
It's...
Despite the Olympics bringing in, like,
no,
millions of tourists.
That is correct. However... The deficit...
Didn't George Osborne have to resort to taxing Cornish pasties?
The deficit has halved from the start of a coalition government to the end of a coalition government. It was on, like, about, I think it was minus 9.9%, and then ended up at minus 4.8%. So it's a half the deficit. As a percentage, has been rounding off the last couple of years.
But then in 2015-16, after they'd won the 2015 election... Osborne outlined plans for 10 billion more in welfare cuts.
$10 billion is not a huge amount.
You know, economic predictions might be out by 10 billion, but it still shows there's a hefty appetite to keep cutting even after the deficit had fallen.
Yes, but that is Osborne past the coalition years, so I don't care about that. I'm not arguing to defend that.
It's floating on a technicality.
But if you look at the early coalition years, that was the setup for it.
Most of the cuts in the early coalition years, whilst some were labour, like people working, right, or people on welfare, for example, they introduced cuts where if you wouldn't be eligible for welfare if you weren't searching for a job. Most of the cuts were against, like, quangos, which are quasi-autonomous
administrative
non-government organisations. Right, they cut the budgets for those. They cut the budgets for internal ministries. The civil service was at its smallest level under the Cameron Clegg coalition since World War II. So they essentially more or less gutted themselves rather than gutted the people, and that has led to an increase in efficiency of government bureaucracy and organisations.
Or did it just lead to overworked, inefficient state departments that couldn't respond to the people's needs?
They're no longer bloated, inefficient. State cheaper to run. They've managed to cut a lot of jobs, so there's arguments that they were bloated. Arguments.
It's whether those jobs would have benefited more had people still been working in them. It's like, take the NHS. I mean, how much can you cut before it starts to get to the point where you shouldn't have been cutting, because you're not cutting bloat, you're cutting essential services without really realising it.
I mean, I suppose if you're arguing it's bloated, then it's going to be left over from the Blair-Brown governments from 2000 to 2010. I mean, Blair was famous for massively inflating the size of government and the civil service, which ran up the government wage bill, didn't it?
I'm trying.
Well, as a master economist that I am, hiring more people does cost more money, so I think you're right.
Anyway, I actually have one point I want to mention, and this will just blow everything you have to say out of the water, because it's the best argument that could possibly exist. Do you all like democracy?
And it's all right.
Do you dislike the fact that every single election, basically in history, the winner gets less than 45% of the vote, like between 29% and 45% of the vote? That upsets you, right? That they'll get a majority of that little percentage of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cameron Clegg, a coalition, the vote shares put together adds up to a stonking 59% of the public vote went to either Cameron or Clegg. This is a majority, the first majority that governed the UK in a long, long time. And that is something that I feel like you cannot be unhappy with.
I mean, that's not exactly their achievements, government, is it?
Would you like to benefit from...
Well, that in that situation, what percentage were each of the parties on individually? I'm going to guess it's a lot less than...
Cameron was 36, Miliband, or whoever... Who was the Labour one, was it?
Paddy?
Would you know this?
Tim Pound.
You have the Labour leader.
What, in 2010?
Yeah, it wasn't Miliband.
Gordon Brown.
It was 2015.
Yeah, it was Brown. Gordon Brown still.
Yeah, Gordon Brown got 29%. and Nick Clegg got 23%. But I think it was like for the first time in a long time, you could say that the majority of people in Britain are being fairly represented by the government.
Do you know when else the majority of people are fairly represented in government? That's right, in the 1992-1996-7 John Major government, when they won the highest popular vote since World War II, 14 million votes for the Conservatives.
What percentage was that?
That is 41.9%. And I defy you, I dare you, to find a higher single vote for any sole government.
What was that, 41?
42%.
42%. Well, in 1997, Blair actually got 43.2%.
Shut up, Will.
So, you know.
I'd also like to point out that Margaret Thatcher got 44% of the vote in her first election.
That's what I was trying to find.
My research lied. So, I take it back, gentlemen, I'm sorry. No, it was the election before when he won 42.2%, and that's still not even the winning.
Still lower than everyone else. Like, I feel like this is one of the most endearing things to me about the coalition government, and it's something you can't easily argue against, so I'm going to claim it as a victory.
I'm just going to say, in 1979, Margaret Thatcher got 53% of the vote.
Did she?
Yeah.
I take back what I said. I'm switching to Team Thatcher. Which one?
The 1979. And then 1983, 61%. And 1987, 57%.
But I suppose fundamentally, if we're going to talk about democratic representation, then...
percentage of the vote.
Yeah, the Conservative Party is a percentage of the vote, according to the accurate source of Wikipedia, in 1983... 61.1%.
Oh, get wrecked.
Oh, wait, no, percentage of total, and then 42.
That's candidates. Percentage of votes is 42% now.
I'm very confused how this thing works.
We can't even use Wikipedia. That is the standard of this podcast.
Just completely stop listening to Max.
Well, that gets edited out.
Sorry to everyone who thought this was a well-oiled fighting, debating machine.
Max, you haven't made any points of the benefits of that.
Well, no, I was actually going to say that if we're going to talk about democracy, well, yes, democratically the coalition was elected in, but then the Lib Dems were absolutely hounded in the 2015 election by the people, showed that if you're going to listen to democracy as the superior voice of reason in politics, then democracy shows that the coalition government was a failure, and the Liberal Democrats did badly, and even the Conservatives only won a slim majority of, 12 votes?
It was
which David Cameron privately did feel was very, very narrow.
I feel like that is more a criticism of our voting system than of
They got like 5 seats. That's not a criticism of the voting system.
Wasn't the whole thing that the Lib Dems didn't do anything that they campaigned saying they would when they were in the coalition, and that's why they were voted out.
Hands up, everyone who's going to university next year. Max, how much are your tuition fees each year?
More than I want them to be.
Could you put a rough... You can round to the nearest 10,000.
9,250.
That's per year?
Per year.
Wow, that's a lot of money. Will, what are your tuition fees?
£9,250.
Per year? For 3 years? Peter, what are your tuition fees?
£9,250.
Well, that's a coincidence, because my tuition fee is £9,250 per year. It's just, I'm just very frustrated that, you know, whatever government it is, but, oh, it was the Lib Dems that put in tuition fees, wasn't it?
The Lib Dems.
Oh, dear. No, and wasn't there a conversation where David Cameron said, hey, we don't have to put in tuition fees if you don't want to, Nick. I realise it's important to. And Nick Clegg said, no, it will be fine.
And what was one of the sort of central policies that they campaigned on during that election?
Can I just remind me,
was it that there wasn't going to be an increase in tuition fees?
And then there was an increase in tuition fees, not by a small amount, but by £8,000.
Let me say.
Per year.
Let me say that one campaign promise was broken. Right? Picture a world where every single political party breaks only one campaign promise. Man, everyone would be ecstatic. That was something that was unavoidable. As you say, the Liberal Democrats were a junior party in a coalition. I do disagree with that, but universities would almost be unable, like, universities wouldn't be able to keep running without them raising tuition fees.
Or alternative funding structure from the government.
The government had to pay, and Cameron said the government's not paying.
But the government's paying anyway. That's the thing. It hasn't really solved the problem because of people our age, not maybe the vast majority, but a good percentage of them are never going to pay
that
back their
true.
Student loans.
So then
it's just from the government anyway.
So if the tuition fees hadn't really been raised yet, you're not going to pay back your student loans ever.
Well, that's not really the point. It's the point that I would have like £30 extra a month for the next 30 years.
I don't have much to counter that with, except I'm going to go to my piece of paper of notes.
No, but that's fair enough, because do you know who the person was who first implemented tuition fees?
Oh, was it?
Are you?
You think I'm the... Was it Blair?
Who it first was added Blair.
Tuition fees. Wasn't university free before him?
It was.
Wasn't it free under Thatcher and under Major?
And then it became £1,250 a year to go to university.
I am going to
maybe
blame this.
Maybe without Blair... Clegg wouldn't have put his up to £10,000 a year.
This is going to be blamed on... Because Blair was sort of continuing the Tory line of neoliberalism, you see. Because the winds had changed and he found the only way to sail his political ship through these stormy waters was to be Margaret Thatcher light. And now...
No, hold on. It's not a valid argument to say that Blair was just doing this for the sake of... You have committed fully to the Blair cause, okay? You can't just...
No. But what I'm saying is things like PFIs and these kind of things, these are continuing in the vein of many other prime ministers. Like, this is not something... He is not pulling outside of the done thing. He is doing what the majority of the people in the government and in the sort of the economists thought at the time was the right direction to go in. And he followed their advice and he did it. We might not like the results, but he wasn't making these ideological decisions blindly. He did think he was doing the right thing. And going back to the minimum wage for a second, there were no negative effects, according to the Rand Corporation, from our eyes overall in the minimum wage. Small subgroups were temporarily negatively affected, like people working part-time, and young people were affected particularly badly in 2008. However, that cannot directly be tied to the minimum wage. So, overall, the minimum wage was one of his biggest policy successes. It pushed people out of poverty because it meant if you had a full-time job, you were much more likely to be able to support yourself. And it did not have these negative effects on the labour market that some naysayers said it would. So, that was an overall fantastic policy. And if you think where we would be today without a minimum wage, it could look the world could look very different in terms of our employment opportunities.
I mean, does he make a valid point?
He does, and continuing on support for the lower class, Cameron and Clegg built upon a successful legacy started by Blair. So, do you know what the minimum personal tax allowance was under Blair and Brown? It was £6,475, and then under Cameron and Clegg, it was raised to £9,440. That is almost a 50% increase.
Do you know...
2 million people were taken out of taxation by that. And the 2 million.
There's slightly alarming. There's 2 million people who are earning between six, and arguably Cameron and Clegg didn't do enough to actually help those people who, between the main terms, are just about managing.
Pay tax anymore?
But they were also getting their benefits cut.
Matt, explain to me the process of fiscal drag.
Fiscal drag. That is where, due to inflation? It's where your wages increases, but the tax brackets do not increase, right? So, and then you're stuck, you get into taxation, but in real terms, you're earning the same amount, but because you're being taxed, you're losing
money. So basically, everyone's going to earn up to about £11,500.
So it is due to inflation, so I don't know why you gave me that look.
There's nothing to do with inflation.
Yeah, it is. The whole point is your wage increases because of inflation, so wages increase. No. But in real terms, you're on the same wage, basically.
No.
Then you get taxed, so you earn less money.
No, fiscal drag is when you don't earn, is when you're untaxed, then you don't earn enough to be taxed. So you just keep your earnings below taxation level.
Right, what am I thinking of?
Not fiscal drag.
Fiscal drag, the deflational effect of a progressive taxation system on a country's economy as wages rise, a higher portion of income is paid in tax.
Yeah, so people refuse to earn higher amounts of income. So because of... Will, I'm lucky you're going to have to edit that into some sort of...
Just cut out everything where I have no idea what I'm talking about. You cut it out.
Do you want to do that again?
It's not going to happen.
The point is, despite raising the income tax bracket, people... That wasn't enough, right? That was one move, but people just... would earn higher amounts but wouldn't still refuse to earn enough to otherwise still refuse to earn more than £12,000, otherwise they'd then be taxed so highly it wasn't worth it. So it encouraged higher savings up to a point, but then the poorest people are still locked into the bottom of society because they can't afford to actually be taxed if they earn any more. Does that make sense?
No, I disagree with that, because the personal tax allowance does increase each year. And the same thing with the minimum wage, it was also increasing each year. Whilst I agree that no government in history pretty much has done enough to promote social mobility, I think you can't say that raising the personal tax allowance was bad for people who benefited from the personal tax allowance being raised.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. That's fairly valid.
I feel like you haven't attacked Max at all.
Yeah,
Max,
I may have been keeping quiet because
Do you want to explain the poll tax to us?
Okay, I'm pretty sure that is where Thatcher, instead of a tax on, what was it? It was a tax on income. It was a tax on how many people lived in your house or something, which, you know, obviously very negatively affected the poor. He would have many children and not be able to afford it and not have much money. And they got tax lots. So that is a bad thing. I'll give you that. However, under Thatcher, the economy did grow. It grew, what is it, 23% across her, I was going to say reign. What would you call it? Leadership?
I'd say reign is appropriate for Thatcher.
There were only 3 years where GDP did not grow. And almost every year it was above 2% growth, which isn't, you know, that's kind of expected.
That's strong for
yeah,
the
strong
economy.
Strong and stable growth. Interest rates fell. They fell from, you know, over 10% in 1976 to just above 5%.
But did she also have interest rates of 15% at some point in her time in charge?
There might have been. There might have been interest rates of about 17%.
That's quite high.
In November 1979, to tackle inflation, because do you know how high inflation was when Margaret Thatcher came to power? It was above 25% at some point in 1970s.
That is a hefty amount. Yeah,
how high was it after? It was below 5%. Again, who makes charts and doesn't put numbers on them? This looks like it's below 3%, about 2.5% at the end of her.
Authoritative. Very good.
There you go. So under her, although, yes, certain things were imposed, which may have not been good for some poor people, there were other improvements to the general global economy, not global, national economy, which were very advantageous.
And Thatcher did promote a stronger Britain abroad. So
she did.
Britain was the first country to host Mikhail Gorbachev before he became leader of the Soviet Union. So they established a good working relationship with him before he came to power, which was quite a coup. So it showed that foreign countries respected Thatcher.
And Thatcher did like working with dictators. We all know that. Didn't she shake a lot of hands with a lot of evil people? Didn't she support the apartheid South African regime and label Nelson Mandela a terrorist?
She might have, but we're not talking about morals, we're talking about the economy at this point, okay? So, shh.
If you're going to talk about morals, John Major, one of the most widely accepted, one of the most moral prime ministers in politics, and none of you can dispute me, because you don't know anything about John
Literally,
Major.
This is what I was thinking. I have nothing to say to you
right,
about John Major.
Allow me to recite my pre-prepared monologue.
Yeah, do you have like a pros and cons list? Can you read your cons out to us?
I do actually have a list of weaknesses.
So I'll repeat them back to you. Like, but didn't this happen? Isn't this a legitimate
I did actually have a list of weaknesses, but I'm not giving them to you. Yeah, so he was respected as one of the most decent people in politics. And one of
Wait, can I just say something quickly? No, unemployment was higher at the end of Margaret Thatcher's premiership than at the start.
And John Major brought it back down again. Yes, he did.
Exactly. Ooh. It looks like it goes up again.
It was down by the end of his
It may be, but you know what
charge.
Also happened during
yeah.
Thatcher?
So, 3 minutes started in 1992, but the spring of 97 when he left oh, office, okay. fallen to half of that.
Do you know what also happened during the Thatcher years? She cut taxes. Do you want to know the tax rates when Margaret Thatcher came into power?
Oh, I reckon I'm going to have a guess. I reckon it'll be 65% for the lowest earners and 98% for the highest earners.
Yes, it was. It's almost like we talked about this before. And that is...
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, what? That I thought that was a joke. That's no, so high.
That is insanely high. So you're paying most of your money...
98% for the higher earners.
Yeah. We had to recover from a war.
It was 20, in like 30 years before. Something. And on the topic of war, the Falklands War. You know my opinion on the Falklands... Margaret Thatcher won the Falklands War, and it's good. But anyway, back onto what I was saying about tax. And you know, when you have the tax rates that high, who just, you know, 65% tax rate for the poorest members of society, what does that do? That's not good. That makes it hard to get by, and it especially makes being self-sufficient, so that if you're getting taxed that much, you can't start your own business. So what do? You've got to go and work for someone else. And working for big companies, what do? They exploit you. They're
We've got the point. We get the point. Yeah.
So right. Under Margaret Thatcher, she cut taxes to basically what it is today. Bit higher, I think. So top tax rate was 40% and the bottom tax rate was 25%. Is he doing some...
He's looking at the John Major Wikipedia page.
He's got the right idea.
What have you been doing for the last 5 minutes, Paul?
I've been looking up... So world GDP growth in mm-hmm. Europe between the years 1979 and 1990 was... England was a bit higher than Europe, but it's not much.
Well,
it's
I want to dispute
really quite
your
small.
Suggestion there was a correlation. I want to dispute that because if you see Europe grew well in the 60s, whereas Britain didn't. So it shows that Britain does and often can and often does buck the trend of European growth. And we've seen that again in 2012 because the Euro, Britain, not 2012, 2014, Britain was growing well while Europe was in a bit of a slump. So I think that's an unfair.
But it's not fair to say, you couldn't say, oh, this is in a background of a terrible world economy, because it's not. The growth
well,
is
yeah.
there worldwide. It's not an outlier.
Yeah, but it was easy enough for a British Prime Minister not to make use of it and waste it, as happened for like 30 years after World War II ended.
I feel like I've been interrupted trying to make this point in my weird introduction monologue that I was making.
So wait, I'm going to interrupt Max as well. I found a problem with John Major. Black Wednesday.
Oh, no.
We had to leave the European rates mechanism, which I don't fully understand. I've read the first page of Wikipedia.
Basically, it was a precursor to the euro to try and establish stable trading relationships in Europe, and the pound was pegged to the Deutschmark, which is the German currency, before the euro, at £6 the Deutschmark, which is very, very high. Well, it might not have been six. I think it was four. It doesn't matter. It was very high, arbitrarily high. And so... it was causing massive pain for the economy, and so John Major and Ken Clark made a decision to leave it, and that caused Black Wednesday when sterling crashed, but then actually the economy was doing pretty well after that.
Do you know how much it cost the UK economy in a single day?
Quite a lot.
£3.4 billion
That's a lot
in a
pounds.
Single day.
Look, the UK economy is over £2.2 trillion, okay? So £3.4 billion is like a drop in the ocean in terms of the value.
Well, that's all I had to say. Max, continue your monologue.
Basically, she cut taxes and cut regulations so people could keep and spend more of their money. And that led
to... Make the rich richer.
No, it also made the middler. Okay. So they can keep and spend more of their own money, which meant that businesses grew. So there was an establishment of hundreds of thousands of small businesses that in modern Britain form the backbone of our economy. The previously entrenched class system was weakened, more people moved into the middle class.
Stop citing the Wikipedia page.
It's not Wikipedia, it is another
I'm cutting you off here. Okay, well, yeah, so you've given us a list of reasons why Thatcher was good and she made the middle middlier. but one of the criticisms of Thatcher is that she did...
She hated poor people.
Her middle class morality was strong, but she wasn't an empathetic, compassionate person. And she ends definitely justified the means where Thatcher was concerned. And so actually this meant that the Conservative Party at the end of her time was not corrupt, not financially corrupt, but morally nearly corrupt. And it had spent too long in power. It was developing excesses of power, becoming almost sick. And John Major had to deal with a lot of those problems when his ministers and MPs were involved in financial sleaze and sexual scandals, because these MPs had lost their moral direction and moral vision, because Thatcher was many things, but you wouldn't say she was a moral leader. And so in that regard, your Prime Minister needs to be someone, and hopefully you'd all agree with me, who morally sets a bit of a tone, sets the pace. Doesn't need to be a bogeyman under the bed telling you what to do, but should at least emphasise goodness and tolerance and kindness. And Thatcher did not do much of that. And I think that's a pretty big stain on her mark.
I'll admit, morally, quite a few things went wrong. You know, there's a few things. Like, I know Peter's about to talk about Ireland. Yeah, there were some bad things that went on there. She did support paramilitary groups in Ireland, which did some bad things. But
paramilitary groups is a nice way to say death squads.
Yeah. But let's get back into the economics.
Yeah, let's stay away from Northern Ireland. We aren't qualified to.
Who cares about morals, you know? Let's talk about money. Cold, hard cash. So, under Margaret Thatcher, she privatised a lot of failing British nationalised industries. And so, such as, you got Rolls-Royce, British Airways, which lost. They were losing so much money. What happened after she privatised them? They're now profitable companies. They were selling shares. That led to. So it's got a weird look for everyone when I said they're profitable.
No, Will, because we were waiting for Will to say something about nationalisation and privatisation.
No, but okay, so in privatising these companies, that led to people being able to buy shares, and this was the first time that any, like, poorer people, first time that anyone in their family had ever earned shares, and in those companies becoming profitable, those poorer people, or mainly the middle class, I'm not going to say poorer people because, you know, they wouldn't buy shares, the middle class gained the income from profitable companies, leading to better stuff. And then, because the taxpayer no longer had to bail out all these failing companies, more tax money could be used towards other things. More taxes could be cut, such as when they were
cut. Was it right that she privatised all these firms? Because we've had an energy crisis a few days ago. Obviously, it'll be quite a long time now for those of you listening. But when most of the Northeast suffered a blackout, 1 million people were affected. And Ofgem, the energy regulator, was unusually strong in its rebuke and unusually quick in saying that actually serious lessons need to be learned from the failure. And this isn't the first time we've had energy and water problems. Water, electricity utilities don't seem capable of consistent improvement and evaluation of their customers over a long period of time. And Thatcher kind of didn't seem to show much regard for customer service and focus on the consumer. Instead, she allowed these firms to think about the profit at the end of the day.
Like, if you look at particularly internet, is somewhere where we've really fallen behind. Compare us to places like Sweden or the South Koreans.
Yeah.
Our rollout of fast internet has been expensive and slow. Like,
yes.
It has been one of the worst, if you're discounting like the States and Australia, who managed to be worse. But it's things like that with the privatisation of BT. We have lost.
But aren't they much more efficient and cost much less to run now that it's privatised? Isn't British Telecom one of the success stories of privatisation?
Well, it's what hurt consumers. The end result is we have a worse product given to us by the country.
I think some could
argue that fast internet is the basis for the modern economy, and that it could.
I think in terms of nationalisation and privatisation, the privatised companies are better than they were, but they're not as good as they should be.
Yes, yeah. But there's also, with internet, I think there's diminishing returns on internet speed. Because when people say fast internet is the most important thing, we already have fast enough internet for the basic consumer. Yes, stock markets may want the fastest internet ever so they can get that extra half a second and make that extra however many thousands, but to the average consumer, having 5G compared to 4G, there is very little difference.
But then if you look at businesses who need to be on the internet quickly, 24/7, 365 days a year, internet in this country, at least through my experience, isn't the most reliable. We do have our issues when it comes to reliability.
Yeah, we also talk about that. The internet in this house is terrible, so it might just go down at any point.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, it's not a business, but it's still the point of the services aren't where they should be. So actually, and zoom out on Margaret Thatcher for a second. I'm going to go in on the coalition government because reading here, if we look at the tax changes in accordance with the welfare changes, the poor actually suffered the most. They felt the changes to taxes weren't enough to offset the benefits changes, and actually, so those who benefited were the the topmost 20th, of the economy. Those were the people who were the net gainers from the changes. So what the coalition government essentially did was use the changes at the other end to make poor people suffer and then increase the benefits for those who are richest. And one thing I just read in this article here is, perhaps surprisingly, overall the welfare cuts and more generous tax allowances balanced each other out, contributing nothing to deficit reduction. Which is an interesting statement if it's true. It looks a reasonably detailed article, but I haven't looked into the behind it. But if that is true, what it means is they have punished the lowest in society and not actually done anything to fix the problem they're saying they're fixing, which would be a fairly damning bit of evidence in favour of the government not being so good in 2010.
You've not been listening to the entire point that you for the past 2 minutes.
I have just been hearing lies and slander against the most holy and honourable government of the coalition. I feel like my first thing I said when we were introducing this topic, if we're using that intro, was the fact that the coalition government was peak UK politics, and I believe it was. I believe the election, the 2010 election, right? You had like Clegg, you had Cameron, and you had Brown, right?
Yeah.
They are just three people separated by the colour of their badge and the colour of their tie. And that is perfect British politics for like a super boring government that does super boring things. And that is what the coalition did. Nothing interesting happened in the coalition. It was like major. Not much interesting happened in the coalition.
I think that's a bit of an oversimplification.
Right, so child poverty was up 3.5% in 2013.
That's not good.
But I think, just to preface this, we did just go through a global recession. So there will attributing all of these increases in poverty and everything on the government is unfair.
Yes, this was a delayed reaction because it was actually holding steady. Because of the changes made by Brown's Labour government and their policies, it was holding steady. And then it was into 2012. And then once the changes made by the coalition came into effect, then it changed.
No, I think you misreading the facts. Brown had managed to bail out the banks and hold the economy steady, but
didn't he sell all of our gold at the lowest global price?
No,
ever?
That was actually a genius move by him, because I can't remember why, but I read it on Reddit that it was actually like 4D chess. And he was like, he sold all the gold to banks, and then he did something with the banks that the banks would normally be super scared by, but because he'd sold them all the gold for really cheap, they had an asset that was rapidly increasing in value, which they
basically, for the people that aren't this deep on Reddit at 3 in the morning, there was a period after the bailout when Gordon Brown, to raise money for the government, sold huge amounts of Bank of England's gold reserves at a really low price, then like 2 days later the price shot up to its highest point in several years.
Yes. Because he limited how much the banks could, how quickly banks could sell gold in the UK.
Okay.
So
anyway,
I'm going to edit all that out because my point wasn't well made.
You're not editing this one, I'm afraid.
Will's going to edit this all out because this point.
Am I?
But I think what the original point, no, the second original point was that I think Will's misrepresenting the facts and that Brown held the economy steady, but the deficit was huge. I mean, it was 10%. So the government was spending, 10% of government spending was actually financed by debt. It wasn't sustainable. That was the highest in the developed world. We've talked about the need for deficit, but
10% is too high.
I will promise you £200 if you can find a proper economist who will say that they can sustain a 10% deficit, Will.
Okay, you're on.
Right. Everyone agreed the deficit had to come down, and I think that's fair enough that it did, and they did bring the deficit down to actually one of the best levels in the developed world.
Wasn't the deficit going to be gone by, was it 20?
The deficit went from 10% to 4.8%.
Yeah, and it's...
So it halved.
It's actually still falling, I think.
It was on target to be eliminated by early 2020.
I believe it's 2.3% in the last thing.
And then Brexit.
Yeah, and then Brexit.
But yeah,
I just want to look at the exchange rate today, just to depress myself.
Ah, good.
That was 1.06.
No, we're not talking about it. Okay. Actually, wait, I still got some euros, so I'm fine.
I've got like 53 cents.
Which went on holiday just before the pound crashed, which is really smart.
Look at this, boys.
Oh, wow. What,
euros.
Can I buy that off you?
Oh, no. It's gone up, actually. It's £1.08. 1 euro and 8 cents is a pound.
That's not great.
Okay.
I mean, hold on a second. You're not going to use that, are you? So if I give you the equivalent in pounds...
Sorry, this is going to cut out, but Peter got conned in the Czech Republic. Because
this is not
legal tender. And he took it as change.
Idiot.
But to be fair, there's no way we could know.
How many euros do you have?
That's a whole...
Well, you're not going to use these. If I pay you £15...
£15 or 15 euros.
That's actually pretty good. Yeah, I mean,
it's good until October, and then you've been massively...
Yeah, no, I know. this is my pension now.
Where were we? Oh, yeah, John Major being the best Prime Minister Britain has ever had, possibly since Gladstone.
John Major is a Prime Minister.
John Major got mortared by the Irish Republican Army. No, that's David Blunkett.
Okay.
New Labour Home Secretary, Conservative Prime Minister. Downing Street got mortared by the IRA, and he started the Northern Ireland peace process after his predecessor had inflamed it, which is quite a significant step. He also put a no-fly zone in Bosnia, which didn't do anything. But he did increase United Kingdom commitments abroad to former colonies and to... Okay. And he began the tradition of government intervention, which in most cases, apart from Iraq, was positive.
John Major is the white bread of prime ministers. He is a slice of white bread. Nothing on it, just, I don't know, had of a glass of water.
The least quite like white bread.
Interesting prime minister.
Can I refer you back to the man who said politics ought to be boring?
Politics should be boring.
And John Major was boring.
Too boring.
Too boring? What do you mean, too boring?
We don't learn about John Major because he didn't do anything. He didn't change much. He didn't...
Bit harsh. Well, yeah, I mean, in this particular...
Isn't that what you want?
No, yeah, I don't want stagnation. No,
wasn't stagnation.
Knowing any facts.
This was a peacetime. Okay, this was a peacetime...
Except the Gulf War.
This was a political peacetime. Oh, no, it was a no-fly zone in the Gulf War, which did make a difference. This was a political peacetime. Right, relative. There was no Brexit, no economic crisis... no public services crisis or anything like this. Okay, and he did what you want him to do. He kept the economy ticking over, 2% growth. He halved unemployment. Wage growth was ordinary. There were no, apart from the ERM and Black Wednesday, there were no economic shocks. And that's what you want from a man in the early 1990s. After economic recovery under Thatcher, you want a guy who just keeps it going. And that's why he was elected in with a huge amount of the vote.
He did get the highest... number of votes of any prime minister up until that point. Percentage, number. That is where you're in.
Isn't that just a function of population growth?
Yes, it is.
Well,
particularly impressive.
But also, interestingly, right, if we're going to talk, I think it's fair to talk about post-prime minister legacy, because prime ministers do quite a lot post-prime ministership. Blair as peace envoy to the Middle East? What?
I'm not going to really be able to defend his record on that too vigorously. But I mean, Blair has been one of those people. He has come back into the public eye recently. If you're talking about things he's done recently, he's been very vigorous in campaigning against Brexit. So he's pushing for a more united, peaceful Europe.
Well, to be fair, he did say the day after the referendum, and I mean, I'm not exaggerating, it was the day after the referendum, we should have a second referendum. And at the time, people laughed at him, but now a second referendum is a serious campaign. A serious movement, would you not feel?
Well, I mean, I think a lot in the recent months, if we're talking about Brexit, it's very much come down to we're either going to get a no deal or it's a second referendum. It's one or the other, and it's just which side's going to win the battle at the last
moment?
Minute.
The money is on no deal.
Yeah, I put money on no deal.
Which is alarming. Right, one of the most infamous post-Prime Minister actions was, of course, Nick Clegg becoming a vice executive at Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
One of the world's...
The evilest companies, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, if we... Deputy Prime Minister, and quite an important one, quite a powerful Deputy Prime Minister, that's a pretty bad legacy. I mean, he's basically just turned around and become an apologist for everything Facebook does, right?
Mm-hmm, that's not good.
That pushes to Cameron Clegg.
And the coalition legacy is Brexit, which is also not particularly great.
I think at the moment they're sitting quite low down on the legacy rankings.
Yes.
Did Thatcher do anything interesting after leaving office?
She said, talked about the Yugoslav wars, and she was very much, she was an advocate of Croatian and Slovenian independence, so she basically wanted Western governments to arm them. But then she also wanted it to end and was critical of the West for not doing enough to end ethnic cleansing during the Bosnian War.
I mean, that is a valid point.
It is a very valid point.
It's not hard to imagine Thatcher intervening in Bosnia.
But then she did also get hired by Philip Morris, the tobacco company, for £250,000 a year. So, yeah.
She did also leave a massive Eurosceptic faction in the Conservative Party.
Yeah, she was very
which, as we all know, fairly fizzled out and
she
didn't do a huge
this
amount.
Savage comment. Was a classic utopian project, a monument to the vanity of intellectuals, a programme whose inevitable destiny is failure.
Yikes.
That is an appropriate
what
reaction.
Is the legacy of Major?
One of the most respected prime ministers ever.
I think the forgettable shouldn't be confused.
Well, no, he doesn't. No, the thing is, he doesn't. He doesn't say anything except when it's important. That's the thing, right? So he talked about Brexit and he said that Brexit was rubbish. I mean, basically, he said that there's a risk of the United Kingdom breaking up. He intervened in the Scottish referendum and said, we should be careful to about voting to break the Kingdom up. He intervenes generally in high crisis moments when
humanity needs him most.
Yes, basically he's like the Avengers equivalent of prime ministers, former prime ministers. But he doesn't, and often prime ministers have gone to him for advice quietly while they're in office because he has quite a lot of pull among Westminster, but often uses that well and uses that in favour of the leadership, whether it's Blair or Cameron. But he doesn't cause storms in the teacup like Thatcher definitely did.
That's true. I don't think there'll be people turning their backs at his funeral.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or getting Ding Dong the Witch is Dead to number three or whatever.
Yeah.
That's pretty... It's pretty harsh to turn your back on someone's funeral. Final closing statements on both your Prime Minister and whether you feel any of the others are of any merit, Peter?
I think the Coalition had flaws. Every government had flaws. The Coalition's flaws were the fact it had to do what was difficult and it had to cut things in order for the long-term longevity of the country. I have changed my opinion a lot on Major because I now have one, as opposed to not knowing who he was before. So you've done that, Theo. Congrats.
Yeah, Max?
Yes?
Any opinions? Closing statements on Thatcher? Any changing opinions on other Prime Ministers?
No, not really. I mean, I think I managed to avoid too much criticism. I thought I'd be criticised a lot more this episode.
Yeah, fair enough. I feel that Major... Yeah, the ERM and Black Wednesday is a pretty big failure on his part. But no one really offered any convincing opinions why he was bad, so Major wins. And it was quite interesting hearing about the coalition government, because consensus is at the moment it's not a good thing.
I mean, the more I've listened to it, the more research I've done this, and actually I was doing stuff in the past, actually I'm liking Blair more than I used to. I still don't disagree. I disagree with his overall direction, but considering, in domestic policy, I mean, considering the sort of the direction the winds were going, as I said earlier, I think he's not as bad as people make him out to be necessarily. Just he is still a war criminal.
But thank you for listening. We hope you have a good good time, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
You can contact us at our email to our podcast. No, hang on.
poorlyinformeddiscussion@gmail.com if you want to do business inquiries or ask us longer questions. Alternatively, our Instagram's where we put most of our content.
At Podcast Poorly.
So you can see behind the scenes stuff. We also have a blog and the link is on the Instagram there. If you want to contact us on Twitter, which we don't use so much, it's also at Podcast Poorly.
That rounds it out.
Cheers for listening. Bye-bye.
Hello and welcome to the Poorly Informed Podcast.
You're the hosting.
It's me, Theo Hunt. I just came back from Paris, where I used the word yeeted some...
What did you... Yeet steak sandwich yeet.